Canto 5, Chapter 3, Text 19. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, wife of King Nabi, Queen Meru Devi, was sitting by the side of her husband, and consequently she could hear everything the Lord had spoken. Purport. According to the Vedic injunctions, one should perform sacrifices in the company of one's wife. Saputni ko dharmam acharet. Religious rituals should be performed with one's wife. Therefore, Maharaj Nabi conducted his great sacrifice with his wife by his side. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam. So this is the fifth canto, and Maharaj Prickett is sitting or lying or has 7 days left to die. Perhaps this is the second or the third day, because the tenth canto is such a large part of the book. And he's listening to Sukadeva Goswami. And so much transcendental knowledge is given, but that transcendental knowledge has a particular purpose. And the purpose of that transcendental knowledge is to cultivate your consciousness so that you can purely hear the pastimes of the Lord. When we hear something, we filter that information through our intelligence, and our intelligence is conditioned by our experiences. And therefore, if the intelligence is not fixed in spiritual knowledge and not purified from material attachments, then when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, the tendency will be to either think them mythology or mundane. Therefore, at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, can you shut that door there? In the very first verse, it gives the ultimate recommendation. What is the ultimate advice? Param satyam. Dimahi. We should meditate on the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. But as Prabhupada points out in the purport, and this is coming from the commentators, Dimahi refers to the Gayatri Mantra. And the Gayatri Mantra is a mantra that's meant to purify the consciousness from material attachment. And therefore, we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and when we become qualified, we get the Gayatri mantra. And by chanting the Gayatri mantra and purifying the consciousness, then it helps us to come to the chanting the holy name purely. So the Bhagavatam has a very systematic, it purifies one and qualifies one, so that when one hears the pastimes of Krishna, he'll not only hear the absolute truth, but he will understand it as absolute truth. And therefore, it's presented very, very systematically, And there are 10 subject matters. Atra sarga visargascha, statir poshanam utaya, manvitara ishakanta, narodha muktir astraya. And it's described, this is described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, that the other 9 subject matters are meant to help you isolate the 10th subject, which is the Ashraya, or the ultimate goal, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Isolate means it will help you so that you can understand it properly. And then when you're actually approaching and hearing about Krishna's pastimes, although we do hear Krishna's pastimes also to become purified. But when we are completely purified, then we'll hear them purely, and they'll have the pure effect on our heart, which is prema, or love. The basic definition of love is an attraction between two beings that have a relationship. And we have a relationship with God. And when we associate with God purely, without misconceptions and without material attachments, and we experience, then we will experience God. We will experience Krishna. And that love will flow from our heart. So there's 10 subject matters. And those subject matters are in every canto. We see in the first canto there's also a Shraya. But there's a progression, so that the first cantos are more with the beginning subject matters, and the later cantos are more with the later subject matters. But the fifth canto comes at the fifth subject, would be utaya, fruitive impetus. Atra sargas visargas cha satir poshanam utaya. What does satir mean? The right situation. And what is the right situation? Satir vaikunta vijayo. That the right situation is that you accept the supremacy, the victory, the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when you do, poshanam, you're protected. And when you don't, utaya, the fruit of impetus. And therefore, what is the last part of the fifth canto? What is the ultimate result of fruitive consciousness? Hell. When Prabhupada came to London, and if you know London, you don't get sun. Mostly you never see the sun in London. It's a special place. Wet and damp, hardly ever see the sun. So when Prabhupada came to London, he was challenged immediately. They would always challenge Prabhupada. So they challenged him. And they said, because they wanted to make Srila Prabhupada out as a fundamentalist preacher, they tried to box him in a particular place. They said, Swamiji, what is your concept of hell? Prabhupada said, London is hell. So the fifth canto, this is very interesting. The end of the fifth canto, we see so much suffering. That's the result of not accepting the supremacy of Krishna, that he's the enjoyer. When you don't accept that Krishna is the enjoyer, then you don't accept the position that you're his servant. And if you're covered from the position that you're his servant, the only position you have is illusion. And it's in that illusion that there's suffering. In reality, there's not suffering. Suffering is an illusion. Even Sri Jiva Goswami gives the example of a magician. What is it? Jadika, I think the word is. A magician. Jaduka. But there's something also, is that in Sanskrit or Hindi? Hindi. I think in Sanskrit it may be a little bit different, but he gave the example of a magician. He can create an illusion. So our suffering is actually an illusion. Because the greatest suffering is death. And death is illusion. Death means what? To experience or fear non-existence. But we're eternal. So non-existence is an illusion. And most of our suffering is this death. And how it affects our consciousness now. And that death is an illusion. Because we're eternal. And therefore in the Bhagavatam, when Shonaka Rishi wants to, someone I was giving one class, I forgot, Mahaprabhu kept on asking questions. And then someone said, this is our Shonaka Rishi. Because Shonaka Rishi in the Bhagavatam, his role was, is his eagerness. And his eagerness kept the katha of the Bhagavatam going. So in a particular time, it appeared that Sutta Goswami had finished the story. Because in the Bhagavatam, a lot of times, Marge Prickett hears the conclusion. There's a lot of what we call tasmat verses. Tasmat verses means therefore. And what is it? What's the conclusion? That the therefore chant, hear, worship, and remember Krishna. If you want to become free from fear at the time of death, chant, hear, remember, and worship Krishna. So it appears to end. But because the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavatam speakers understand that people don't have the sufficient purity of intelligence and frame of reference to actually realize and apply that properly, they continue to explain various things. So it came to a conclusion, therefore, chant, hear, remember, and worship Krishna. And then what happened? Shonaka Rishi, who's hearing this dialogue, became worried. And what was his fear? The katha may end. So he stands up in the assembly and starts to glorify Krishna katha, how the senses are useless or even detrimental if they're not used. What is the use of your legs if your walking tendency is not used to go to the temple? It's like the legs on the trunk of a tree. He was describing some, and then he said, Ayur Harati Vaipumsa Udyan Astancha, with the rising and the setting of the sun, the life of every man decreases. Except that person who is absorbed in Krishna Katha, which awakens his eternal relationship with God. And therefore, when you stay and act on that platform of the soul by serving Krishna, you become free from fear. I remember a time of my greatest trial, calamity. And what is calamity? Calamity is you think you're the controller, and therefore you have a set environment and you feel kind of comfortable where particular things are. So sometimes we have anxiety that something comes into our world we don't like, or something is taken out of our world that we like, and we become disturbed. But calamity is when your whole world moves against your control rapidly. That's calamity. And that I was in New York, I was in the Lower East Side when the World Trade Centers were bombed. I remember I got a phone call from your godbrother, Yasoda Dulal. I got a phone call from your godbrother Yasoda Dulal, and he was just approaching the World Trade Center. And then I got a phone call because I was in the ashram there. And then I didn't hear that phone call. And then I remember being there and so many even devotees so distressed because they had a certain concept of what their environment is that fit their comforts. And they perceived that this was going to change things rapidly. But one who takes to Krishna, he has no fear. So one time I was having my personal calamity. My world was changing so rapidly in ways that I did not like. And I remember my only recourse was to take shelter of the holy name of Krishna. So I was taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna, and I had a slight realization. And that realization was that by chanting and chanting, serving Krishna, that I was actually acting on the platform of the eternal self. And that person, the soul who I am, who is serving Krishna, that person does not die. That person is eternal. And I realize, where is my anxiety in life? My anxiety in life is because I was doing so many things that was not identifying with the soul. I was doing so many activities in relationship to the body, which is temporary. And therefore, there was so much fear because the body, if you identify with the body as the self, then you will become non-existent. So here this fifth canto deals with this utya, this fruit of impetus. And ultimately that fruit of impetus, that selfish consciousness, that itself is hell. Hell is not a place. Hell is a consciousness. Just like there's a story, and it's in a commentary on the Shikshastakam, Cheto Darpanam Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagninir. So one of the qualities of chanting the holy name is that it extinguishes the fire of material existence. So there is one story about a person who went to hell. And that person who went to hell, he was the disciple. He was in an ashram. So the guru, you know, the ashram means to build the yajna, to build a fire. So the guru said, now go out and get me some fire. But on that day, it was raining. So he couldn't find the proper wood. So when he came back and he didn't have the proper wood, he said, Gurudev, I cannot find fire. The guru said, go to hell. He said, oh, go to hell? I must go to hell? So he went to hell, and he saw that everyone was burning. So he asked Yamaraj. He said, oh, this is a very good place where I can serve my guru's order. He said, can I have some fire? Yamaraj said, there's no fire here. He said, what do you mean there's no fire here? He said, yes, there's no fire here. These people brought their own fire. So hell is not a place. Hell is a consciousness. Narayana prasarve nakutas chanya bibhyate swaga pavaga narakeshu apitul yatta darshana. For one who has that love in his heart for God, he's never in hell. And even if he's in hell, it's not hell. It's not hell because of the consciousness involved. So the end of this fifth canto leads us to this hell. Because the theme and subject is this selfish consciousness. And when it's unchecked, it burns in your heart and you feel hell. What's very interesting is when the sixth canto begins, which is mostly about the holy name, at least at the beginning, you see the consciousness of a Vaishnava. Because Maharaj Prickett, he's in a very materially precarious position. He's given as the example of the nine qualities of Bhava Bhakti as perseverant. Why is he given as the example of perseverant? But besides the fact that he's not eating, he's not drinking, he doesn't have to eat and drink. Because he's feeling the association of Krishna in terms of the Krishna Katha. Therefore, he's also given as an example of the symptom of raga, which is a level of prema. And what is raga? Raga means that you're feeling so much love for Krishna that in separation from Krishna, the greatest pleasure is the greatest distress. And in association with Krishna, the greatest distress is the greatest happiness. So he's in association with Krishna. He's hearing this Krishna Katha, which is non-different than Krishna, because Krishna appears. His manifestation and sound is the Bhagavatam. So he's hearing the Bhagavatam and associating with Krishna, and therefore the thirst and the hunger is the greatest ecstasy. Just like Srimati Radharani, when she cooks for Krishna in Nandagram, Rohini is the head cook. Everything is prepared when she comes to Nandagram. And then she takes off her abaram, her ornaments. No, she takes off her, it's a different word. Abaram means the decorations, not the ornaments. She takes off her ornaments and she goes to cook. And there's 100 of those clay stoves because they're cooking such a feast for Krishna. But she's feeling so blissful, so cool. But when she's in Jawat, in separation from Krishna, her body is burning in the fire of separation, and her assistants make a cool bed for her of lotus flowers and layers of cool chandan. She's burning. That's raga. But Maharaj Prickett is also given the example of perseverance. Why? Imagine you were in a room and you had to chant your 16 rounds, but someone told you that within this room is a deadly cobra. How would you sit up and chant? But he was perseverant. That's actually the nature of a sadhu. And they take pride in that. The nature of a sadhu is that faith in God, that God will do what's best. Just like Haridas Thakur was in that cave and there was a deadly snake and he was not in all distress. One Kartik, my Kartik vow is to go to the Jamuna with Jayadvaita Swami and then go to Radha Damodar and circumambulate Radha Damodar. That was part of my vow. And we bathe in the Jamuna first. I remember one day we were bathing in the Jamuna and there was a sadhu, just had kopins, nice size belly, little trident, and he was long, straggly gray hair. And he was offering the Jamuna to the Jamuna and to the sun and to turning around, and then I, a little embarrassed, but I was in the water, and then my assistant was there, and he said, "Samf, Samf, snake." So I saw the snake, and I ran out of the water. And it's very difficult to run with water to your waist. And when sadhus see this, they kind of laugh, because he didn't move. And he just said, "Sadhu deke." The snake saw a sadhu. I've seen this many times. They have that faith. I don't know what other faith they have. "Sadhu deke," he saw a sadhu. Then the snake went further and further. Marge Prickett was perseverant. And he was there. And just imagine, there's a psychological fact that when someone gets ill, they become self-absorbed. Immediately. They just want that love, affection, center of the... They become self-absorbed. But the amazing thing of Maharaj Prickett, at the end, when he hears about the hellish planets, he becomes paradukaduki. He becomes overwhelmed with compassion for those who are suffering. And then asks, what is the best means of atonement? And then there's that discussion. And the conclusion is, the best means of atonement is the holy name. And I said before, I read Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami's comment on that verse, explaining when one chants the holy name, how pleased Krishna is. We should understand that when we're chanting with some concentration and intent to please Krishna, he's actually hearing and becoming pleased. We should chant for the pleasure of Krishna. And he says, "I will protect this devotee." And then he sees, if you have that name, the holy name appears in your consciousness, you have that shakti which is for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna becomes pleased. And it's so nice. I was there in Vrindavan. I was fortunate to be there in Vrindavan the last month of Srila Prabhupada's manifested pastimes. And my godbrother, Bibi Govinda Swami, I was very busy. It was, my service started at 5 o'clock in the morning and it ended late at night. It started before I had even any sadhana. It was just all day. But then he came to me and he said, "You know, there's hardly anyone in Prabhupada's room." And Prabhupada was very merciful in his last days. Usually, if you saw that room, to get into Prabhupada's room, Tamal Krishnamurti sat in that little room beforehand, and he was Prabhupada's secretary. And you couldn't get into Prabhupada's room without an appointment. But at the end, Prabhupada just opened the doors. You can come in whenever you want. 24 hours a day. There was no time you could not come in. I'll tell you just one nice story about that, and then I'll make my point. I'll make my point first. When Prabhupada was on his bed, and we would see many, many pastimes, and one thing I remembered is when Prabhupada was there, he was actually, this is amazing, because Prabhupada could eat at most a half glass of pomegranate juice. At most. He wasn't eating. I mean, that's what he would drink, some pomegranate juice, maybe. But I was so impressed that Prabhupada asked what the devotees were eating. He was inquiring, in his last days, he was inquiring about the kitchen. And fortunately, we had the best cook. And in those days, just like here, everyone ate together. all the sannyasis that were visiting Srila Prabhupada, no set, everyone ate together. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, no, the prasadam is so wonderful. It is cooked by one devotee named Ayodhyapati. And Ayodhyapati, when he took sannyas, became Bibi Govinda Swami. But there was one other nice story, that one day Krishna Das Babaji came to see Prabhupada. And he was at the front door, and he was trying to get in the front door. He was trying to get in the front door, and Bibi Govinda Swami, who was there, he was the head cook, he said, no, if you want to go in, you have to go in the back. So he went around the back. Then he thought, let me see what's going on. So he went and he peeked in and he saw the most wonderful scene. Because, you know, Prabhupada, it's an austerity. He was just with disciples. That's nice, and that's a certain relationship, but there's something about being with your equals, the exchanges of love, is something very special. See, Prabhupada didn't have that. One time, Rabindra Sarup commented on the problems of some of the problems in ISKCON in the early days, and he said the problem was Srila Prabhupada was the only adult. There was only one adult. We were all so young. So he went and let me see what is happening. And he saw Prabhupada and his godbrother just joking and joking and laughing and exchanging this friendly relationship. And then he heard Prabhupada say, he was enjoying so much, Prabhupada said, Tandara Charana Seva Bhakti Sanivas Janame Janme Hoy E Abhilas. Let me enjoy the association of these devotees life after life. So, so nice, the beginning. Now, this particular verse, which so far I haven't spoken on because probably I don't have so much realization on it. Religious rituals should be performed with one's wife. But there is a very significant point here. I think there's two points, and someone may know more deeply the religious principle. But one, there's something about worshiping together that is, and there's a Shastric reference for it, and it's the basis of Sankirtan, that has extra potency in invoking the Lord's mercy. And it's a commentary on the birth of Lord Krishna. And the question was, when Lord Brahma went to the milk ocean, why did he bring so many people? He brought all the demigods. Why did he bring all the demigods? And the example was that to petition the Lord, it's very powerful to do it in groups. It's just like sometimes you see a protest. If there's one man that's saying, this is not fair, we want this. But they go with a group. It makes more power. So he said, and then the commentary was, therefore, a family should come together to worship the Lord, because it will have power in petitioning the Lord's mercy. And then here, the other point I thought is the religious ritual should be performed with one's wife. And this says something about the importance of the woman's role in society. A very important thing is it says there are seven mothers in society. So what is the role of a mother specifically? One of her roles, or her nature that leads to a particular type of role, is that the woman's nature is more, by nature, more affectionate, and she nourishes. And this is a very important role in this society. And if I had some realization about this, and because I explained before that somehow where I'm living now, or at least I have a base where I can keep my books, I'm around a lot of families somehow. So I'm observing a little bit. And I think this point is very, very important. And I had a realization about this, that this affectionate nature, this nourishing aspect, is very, very essential in society for the development of strength of mind. This comes from the mothers in society, because they're nourishing specifically the children. And I had two realizations about this that I'd like to share. One was, well, I'll say, I don't know much astrology, but I dabble in it occasionally, just to know a little something. So there's something called akaraka. Akaraka means something that indicates something. So your wisdom indicates by Jupiter, your sense of authority by the sun, your relationships by Venus. So different houses and different planets are karakas. So I just saw, what is the karaka for the mind? And what is the mind? The mind is the when one has the proper heart. And that's connected to the mind, because unless you have the proper heart, you can't, that's controlled and satisfied. It affects your thinking process, how you make the decisions, your ability to open your heart, and also even to control your mind. So the karaka, or the indicator, is your moon and the fourth house. But then I saw another interesting thing. The same karaka for the mind is the karaka or indicator for the mother. So it means they're very, very much correlated. How someone is nourished by affection when he grows up is the main influence for the development of his mind. And the most important thing is your mind. And that's why the women in society were so revered and so protected. Now, I had two realizations. When I was thinking about, two realizations came. One realization, I was in one temple, and a devotee had, and it was India, he had some mental distress, and it was getting very, very serious. And I saw that I was trying to get him professional help. Even though he was a very good devotee, I was trying to get him professional help, and I wasn't able to convince people. And finally, after a long while, when the person almost became psychotic, I finally got him some help. And I went to the person in charge. And the person in charge, even to this day, he's taking care of his mother. Yeah, so, and I said to him, I said, you know, the problem here is you don't understand the necessity for mental health care. Because when you were young, you had a mother at home who fed you. And he said, yes, he says, I don't understand. Even when I read about it, I can't understand mental health problems. He couldn't understand mental health problems. Because what is it? When the mother feeds the child, what is her consciousness? Let the child be pleased. So when the child eats, he's eating, it's very nicely cooked, but he's tasting the love of his mother. So that type of culture, one of His Holiness Radhanath Swami's disciples was telling me, the instruction that he got, that his wife should stop working and stay at home and take care of the children.
I'm sure there's individual instructions for different, but he was appreciating it so much for the effect that it had on his children. Because when you're nourished, when you're young, with affection, it inoculates you against mental problems. Because all mental problems are that lack of feeling secure, etc. So it's a very, very important role. And I'll finish with the second realization how I had this. And when Radhanath Swami, I was surprised to see him in Vrindavan. I wasn't expecting him there. And I met him outside in front of the guest house, and he said that he's taking his mother's ashes to the Jamuna. Would you like to accompany me? I said, sure. And he said, okay, you lead kirtan. So I saw that, and I hope I don't embarrass him, but he'll forgive me. He's very merciful. So he was holding the ashes, and he was walking. And he was doing it as one is very attentive and reverent. And the whole way he was walking very carefully, and I was leading kirtan, and many people joined. And then it was done at the bank of the Jamuna. And the whole ceremony was done. And then I went with him and Vishwaroop and Dina Bandhu. We went on a boat in the middle. And then very carefully he put the ashes. And later, I asked him about his relationship with his mother and growing up, etc. And he explained that, you know, he got so much nourishment and both his parents were very kind. And then I was thinking, because one thing I appreciate about Maharaj is his heart. He has a strong mind. And that strong mind is the ability to express emotions and the ability to not be swayed by false emotions. You know, when he makes up his mind, he's very strong. He has a strong mind. He doesn't get mental about things. That comes from that security, and also the fact that he's very open and loving. So I correlated the two. And therefore, I understood from astrology and this, that what an important role the mothers have in society. Because the whole mental health and develop of mind is dependent on that nourishment and affection when one's young. And you don't understand it as much as I understand it from where you preach. But when you preach in America, where they have the nuclear family and 75% of the people get divorced, at least 50% of the people you're preaching to, even though they may be very sincere and very determined, they have depression. So many people have severe depression, mental disorders, anxiety, obsessive compulsive. And if you look it back, it all has to do with the social structure, where the women are not protected and revered and honored for their role in society. And therefore, so many children grow up. And I was actually specifically thinking of one Indian boy that I helped make a devotee, who somehow he came to America when he was one. And I tried to help him in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, actually, he at one time he went crazy. And I know he was always dealing with this. But then when you investigate, you know, somehow the situation with his family, both working, they weren't able to give him that. And the lacking is there. So here, in this verse, Saputniko Dharmam Achare, that religious principles are done with the wife. That she's included and she's revered and respected. And the husband, who is the protector, the main protection, is that the situation is such that she could also advance in her spiritual life by taking advantage of whatever sacrifices and dharma that's available to the husband. So, and I'll close the book, but I'll end with just one more story. Because usually I can't say anything, but there's so gracious the audience. Their eagerness is somehow inspiring me. I can't. But there's one story of where someone is condemned because he doesn't include his wife in the sacrifice. And that's the holy place of Pushkar. And what does Pushkar mean? Push means what? Flower. And what does Kar mean? Hand. So when Lord Brahma wanted to come to earth to have a place of sacrifice, he was granted the benediction of throwing some flowers, and where they land, he could have a place of worship and religiosity on the earth planet. And the earth planet has special benedictions for spiritual life. So it fell in Rajasthan near Ajmer. So he came to perform his sacrifice, and his wife, not Gayatri, what's the other one? Savitri. So his wife said, "Oh, sacrifice, let me get my friends." Now, you know, when they do these rituals, there's an auspicious time, and it can't go beyond the auspicious time. So it was going beyond the auspicious time, and Lord Brahma was getting worried because then he wouldn't have this place of worship. So he said, "It's time. What should I do?" And he told the priest. So let's have it. Brahma said, "Let's have it without my wife." He said, "No, you cannot have it without your wife. Sapatniko dharma acharet." He said this. Same thing. Without the wife, you cannot do religious activities. What should I do? He said, "Well, you can get another wife." "Another wife? I can't even deal with the one I have. What should I do? What should I do?" He said, "There's no choice. Sapatniko dharman acharate. There's no choice." So he said, "Who?" "Oh," he said, "Well, there's a nice young lady named Gayatri. And she sings very beautifully." He said, "Okay." So he sits and has the sacrifice. And all the guna avatars are there. Brahma invited Lord Shiva. He invited Lord Vishnu came. Yajnavai Vishnu came. And then when he came down, the sacrifice was beginning, and Savitri came, and she saw he got married again, and she was so furious. She said, "Oh, Lord Shiva, you're here for this worship. You like to be worshipped? You like the worship? Well, your followers will only be hobgoblins and ghosts. Vishnu, you think you maintain goodness? And you're coming here? You think this is nice to have another wife that someone is having? You think this is religious? What? Well, okay, then I curse you. In your next life, your wife will be taken by a rakshasa." That's Ramachandra. And then he said, "Brahma, oh, you like to be worshipped. You wanted a place of worship. Oh, you want a place of worship? Okay, then this will be the only place you're worshipped." And actually, it's an amazing phenomenon, right? How many Vishnu temples? How many Shiva temples? But the only two Brahma temples that I know of is in Barsana on the hill, because it's his hill, and Pushkar. And I did go to Pushkar. It was so nice, and we chanted the Brahma Samhita at the temple there. And Pushkar, of course, is famous also for Gajendra Moksha. Pushkar is also famous for where Vishvamitra Muni was doing his meditation. So it's a very, very, very nice holy place. Okay, one question, because it's already 9:05, if there is, otherwise I'm going to... Okay, this is last question, because time is past.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the enlivening class. Maharaj, sometimes when we go out to preach to people who do not have information of Krishna consciousness, we tell them that chanting Hare Krishna controls the mind, and everybody is eager for mind control.
Yeah.
And we also publish books.
Yeah.
So, how is it that we devotees, is it that we do not have faith, or are we not doing it properly? Or is it that the Hare Krishna mantra is being misused for mind control? Can you please explain?
You know, I was just asked that question by someone, and the answer I have, that's a whole class on the holy name. You know, why people, even their devotees, don't have taste. The first thing is, one should understand Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Because we don't have taste, we shouldn't think that everybody doesn't have taste. But I would just say two things. Taste in chanting is any activity becomes work if there's no love. So when we sit down to chant, it's not just that moment. Our whole life has to be, we're not just investigating our chanting, but it's our life has to lead to that life of love. But the real thing that our acharyas emphasize, and that's stressed in the second verse of Shakshastakam, etadrasi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivam indrasami hajani nanuraga, that it's due to offenses. That's really... We have to be very careful. A society of devotees is very, very nourishing. But at the same time, in a society of devotees, the opportunity is there to offend others. So if we be very, very careful, that's one thing. And the other thing is, this chanting, we do have taste. I see people do kirtans here for hours and hours and hours. They have taste for the holy name. I see the congregation. Do you want to eat or you want to have kirtan? Kirtan! That's taste for the holy name. But somehow or other, when you're doing japa, it's more like a mystic meditation type thing. And it's you have to gear yourself a little bit as a yogi. You know, you have to really... There's so many things, because the holy name is Krishna. But to experience in something, it's not just the senses. We can chant, but if our conscience is not focused, we won't hear. That's a fact. So the mind has to be fixed, and also the intelligence. We have to understand the importance of the holy name. And we have to develop humility. There's so many things that go into it. I'm actually writing something now about this, because I was asked this question by someone, and I saw that it affects people's faith. But it's this japa, it's we have to, main thing is regulation. Without regulation, we can't focus. And without focus, we can't experience the object that we're trying to associate with. We have to be regulated. And our whole life, I mean, then if we've eaten too much, there's so many things that affects that type of meditation. We're disturbed in our mind. The main thing is attitude, humility, and avoiding offenses. So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya.